Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Land Transfer Post-Decision Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 31st, 2009, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Hawaii v. Office of Hawaiian Affairs. In this case, the court considered whether the apology resolution passed by Congress restricted the state of Hawaii's sovereign authority to transfer publicly held land for private development. In a 9-0 decision delivered by Justice Alito, the court ruled that the resolution did not create new substantive rights that limited Hawaii's sovereign authority. To discuss the decision, we have the director of the Heritage Foundation's Center for Legal and Judicial Studies, Todd F. Gaziano. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Gaziano.
In 1993, Congress passed a joint resolution apologizing for the American role a century earlier in the overthrow of the Hawaiian monarchy. The somewhat narrow issue that the Supreme Court answered this past year in Hawaii versus Office of Hawaiian Affairs is whether the 1993 resolution stripped the state of Hawaii's power to sell or develop any of the former crown or monarchical property that was conveyed to it at the time of its admission to the Union. The short answer the U.S. Supreme Court provided was that Congress did not attempt in 1993 to strip the state of its sovereign power to alienate the land granted to it in 1949. And if Congress were to attempt to do so, that would raise grave constitutional problems. The question for most lawyers might be why any serious person would argue that the 1993 apology resolution affected such a change in the state's power to manage its property, and especially why the Hawaii Supreme Court accepted that argument. But to others who are familiar with recent litigation and legislation concerning the claims of so-called Native Hawaiians, the case is even more interesting, including one basis for the court's decision and what the Hawaii Attorney General conceded at oral argument in response to Justice Scalia's questioning. To begin at the beginning is a challenge, however, because people on the islands never agree on what the relevant factual starting point is. And many of us on the mainland try in vain to point out that almost all of the pre-1959 history is irrelevant to the pending legal and constitutional claims. Nevertheless, please permit me to editorialize on some of the background facts, irrelevant though they are to the present legal claims. The Kingdom of Hawaii was a multiracial society prior to its initial unification by King Kamehameha the Great in 1810. Within 20 years of that date, the Hawaiian monarchy had declared Christianity the official religion of the islands and attempted to westernize its government and culture, including ending barbaric and inhumane practices, such as the laws forbidding women from eating many nutritious foods. Western missionaries played a decisive role in convincing the Hawaiian monarchy to adopt Western practices, but as James Michener's portrayal illustrated, the Western powers did not force this cultural shift. Indeed, Western sailors in the area may have been dismayed that the Christian nobility tried to stop the sailors' sexual encounters with native women that would have been permitted under traditional mores. In 1840, the Kingdom of Hawaii adopted a constitution with a bicameral, multiracial legislature. The constitution was signed by two hands, that of Kamehameha's son, King Kamehameha III, and that of the holder of the second highest office in the nation, the son of the British-born Hawaiian minister, John Young. Its first sentence can be transmitted as follows: God has made of one blood all the races of people to dwell upon the earth in this unity and blessedness. As was the case elsewhere in the 19th century, the Hawaiian Parliament gradually grew in power as the commercial classes asserted their influence and the monarch's authority slowly waned. In the early 1890s, however, the reigning queen tried to reassert some of her more traditional prerogatives. This led to the disputed coup in 1893, which was led by the professional and commercial classes with advice from the United States ambassador and a detail of Marines from a United States ship. The provisional government then sought annexation by the United States. which brings us to some facts that actually are relevant to the current legal disputes. In the Newlands Resolution of 1898 and the Organic Act of 1900, Congress accepted from the Republic of Hawaii various lands ceded in absolute fee, including the former crown or monarchical lands. The Supreme Court quotes from these federal laws that the title to such lands is free and clear, and that it shall be subject to alienation and all other uses as may be set forth in federal law. In 1959, Congress admitted Hawaii into the Union, and its Admission Act granted Hawaii most of the Crown lands in trust for various purposes. But in 1993, Congress enacted the joint resolution we mentioned before to acknowledge the historic significance of the overthrow of the Kingdom of Hawaii, to express its regret for American involvement, and to support reconciliation efforts underway in the state. The apology resolution made a series of claims or observations about the overthrow, which are disputed by many on the islands and elsewhere, but that the court had no reason to consider except for the legal implications thereof. The lawsuit that precipitated the court's decision this year began when Hawaii tried to develop a parcel of former Crown land in Maui. The Office of Hawaiian Affairs, which is designated by state law to manage the funds from the trust assets, objected to the transfer, arguing that the land was now encumbered with the claims of native peoples, as recognized in the apology resolution. In state court, OHA maintained that Congress had actually amended the Admissions Act and created or revived such legal claims. And the Hawaii Supreme Court seemed to accept this argument in a somewhat confused opinion. Whatever its rationale, the state Supreme Court enjoined the state from selling or otherwise transferring hundreds of thousands of acres of land until a reconciliation was accomplished. By the time the case was argued in the high court, the OHA party shifted their legal position. They argued that the case should be dismissed for want of federal jurisdiction because the state ruling was based solely on state law, and that the apology resolution was only cited because it acknowledged the validity of the pre-existing equitable or moral claims to the disputed lands. In a unanimous opinion by Justice Alito, the court first confirmed its jurisdiction to hear the case by concluding that the state Supreme Court plainly held that its decision was, quote, dictated by federal law. The court also noted that the litigants claimed legal title to the land in seeking the injunction, not just a declaration under state law that they had serious moral claims. On the merits, the court quickly refuted the various arguments why the apology resolution supports the injunction. The court held that all the preambular whereas clauses are conciliatory or precatory, regardless of whether they are true or not, by the way, and that they are not substantive. The court wrote that, quote, such terms are not the kind that Congress uses to create substantive rights, especially those that are enforceable against co-sovereign states, end quote. As an interpretive tool, the court relied on its maxim that repeals by implication are not favored unless clear and manifest. The court also explained why a disclaimer in the apology resolution that no substantive rights are created against the United States cannot be converted into an affirmative recognition that such claims do exist against another sovereign. The court also contrasted the wording of the Hawaii apology resolution with other resolutions that actually do create substantive rights, such as the Japanese Internment Compensation Statute and the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act. The court's final ground for reading the apology resolution as it did was that any other interpretation would raise grave constitutional concerns, for it would purport to cloud Hawaii's title to its sovereign lands more than three decades after the grant of that land in the Admissions Act. The court cited its previous precedents for the proposition that Congress cannot, after statehood, reserve or transfer submerged federal lands that it had previously bestowed upon a state. An attempt to cloud hundreds of thousands or millions of acres of non-submerged lands in Hawaii would raise even greater concerns. The court did not address two other constitutional problems with OHA's reading of federal law raised by several amici that I respect, including serious equal protection issues and questions under the equal footing doctrine. But the court's reliance on the finality of the land grants in the Admissions Act of 1959 is enough to prevent Congress from trying to change the status of the state's ownership or title to the disputed lands. The opinion does not address most of the issues underlying the so-called Native Hawaiian Government Reorganization Act, also known as the Akaka Bill, which involve whether Congress can recognize an alleged tribe of Hawaiians composed of those with one drop or more of Aboriginal blood, and then instruct the various sovereign governments to negotiate with this purported tribe over various treaty claims. But the court's rationale does support an admission by Hawaii Attorney General Mark Bennett that he made in response to Justice Scalia's questioning at oral argument. Attorney General Bennett is a proponent of the Akaka Bill, so it was interesting when Scalia asked him whether the state legislature could purport to grant Native Hawaiians special interest in the Crown lands by law because the legislature believed that they had a valid legal claim to those lands. The Attorney General responded, quote, "I think that would be contrary to federal law, Your Honor." Not surprisingly, Scalia readily agreed. In a perverse way, however, the decision in Hawaii versus Office of Hawaiian Affairs may increase the call for passage of the Akaka Bill because it is becoming more and more apparent that other legal avenues are not open to the separatists to secure their sovereign and quasi-sovereign objectives.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.